And welcome to the Faceless Men podcast covering HBO's Game of Thrones television series. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm your host, Jesse.
And we are covering Season 4, Episode 3, Breaker of Chains. It originally aired April 20th, 2014. And we see a bump back up to the premiere numbers. As far as viewers go, it's another 6.6 million viewers for this episode.
Wow.
I think that they heard that Joffrey died and everybody's like, yay, we want to watch it again. So, Alex Graves returns to direct this episode, and this episode was also written by David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the Double D's. I'd like to give a shout-out to our theme song provider, Remix Fix. You can find them at soundcloud.com/remix-fix. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/facelessmencast. You can find us on Twitter at facelessmencast. You can find us on Google Plus if you search for Faceless Men Podcast. And you can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher now. You can find us on our website at madbrewlabs.com.
Valor Dorharis.
So, Jesse, what do you think overall about this episode?
I really liked it.
Really? I kind of thought it was a downer episode, man.
It was definitely pretty dark.
It was pretty dark.
But I love it. It ended on a nice upbeat.
It did end on a nice upbeat. So far, this is my least favorite episode of the season, and I have some particular issues that I'm going to bring up when we get to the scene I want to talk about at length.
One more thing about the episode. I definitely think it answered a lot of our questions.
Oh, yeah. We had a bunch of questions, speculation, and this one knocked a bunch of them crossed a bunch of them off our list. So diving into the episode, we come to the opening sequence. For the first time this season, we don't have a previously on clip.
I don't know if you count that kind of opening shot of Joffrey's dead face.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But yeah, it didn't say previously on. But yeah, I think every episode from here on out should open with that face.
I think I'm going to agree. I'm going to have to frame that and put it up on my wall.
Somewhere. Oh, yeah. We should totally. I'm going to make that our Facebook cover image. Joffrey's dead face. Yeah, it was awesome. I love the purple vacant eyes with the blood running out of the nose
and
mouth.
That looks suits him. Yeah.
That looks suits him for sure. Dead. We don't see any new locations in the opening sequence. And we jump right into King's Landing, seeing the fallout from Joffrey's death. And what it does, it takes off right where the last episode ended, where Cersei is demanding them to take Tyrion away.
Yeah.
And you can see Sansa actually left with Dantos. I was surprised.
Yeah, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, I totally didn't expect it. And I called that she wouldn't leave, but she was kind of forced to.
Yeah, he didn't really give her a no.
Yeah, there wasn't really an opportunity not to go. So
the confusion didn't help. Joffrey dying didn't help. And them yelling for Tyrion's capture didn't help. So
right. And then we see Tywin basically closes down the capital. No one leaves the capital! Except he said it much better. Charles Dance is a much better actor than I am. And then, so it kind of cuts to at sea, right? Dantos and...
It cut to them flying through the city.
Yeah, there was a short montage of them running through tunnels and whatnot, and then to the shore, and they get in a boat. And then, of course, once they're in the boat, it cuts to at sea. It's kind of foggy, but it must be close, because...
You don't row in a rowboat that far.
But... That's true. You don't... you definitely... A fat, drunk old man doesn't row a rowboat that far, but what strikes me as odd, it must have been some amount of time, because it's dark and foggy.
Yeah. Fog just doesn't happen.
But I guess it was
over the water. So
right. So. But, I mean, it's kind of nighttime dark, too.
It had to be pretty quick, though, mainly because they didn't get caught.
You're right, they didn't get caught.
I can't imagine it's all that hard to see people rowing a robot out of
the
water.
Yeah, I mean, a little dot. Well, I don't know what the surround... I don't know what the bay, you know, because there's Blackwater Bay there, and I don't know what the surrounding terrain is like. So there could be... It could be riddled with, like, reefs and, you know, little small island-type stuff that they could maneuver through.
That's true, but for some of the opening shots and then you're looking out on the water, it doesn't seem...
That's true.
To me, it doesn't seem that way.
That's true. And definitely when they left, it didn't look like there's a lot of stuff they could hide in.
And if you're closing the capital, you're putting out ships. You're going to put out some ships. Probably not a whole bunch of reefs because of the amount of, well, maybe some unnatural reefs now. Blackwater.
There's some unnatural ones. Yeah, definitely. A whole fleet has sunk. Providing homes for all the little fishes.
Yes.
And bodies.
Lots of bodies.
So we see them arrive at the ship, and Dantos is encouraging her to climb up the ropes, and he says, "You'll be fine, you're stronger than you know," which I thought was a very nice quote. It kind of harkens back to her mother's strength, I think, you know, because Catelyn Stark was a very strong woman.
Yeah, Sansa's been reminded of that several times, which by Tyrion and now Dantos.
But, and who do we see owns the ship?
Oh, someone who's not supposed to be there, Mr. Peter Baelish.
Yeah, we were operating on the impression that he was in the Eyrie or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, but he's not there.
Nope.
He's on a ship, and it seems like he definitely knew what the hell was going to happen.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about that.
He was clearly waiting for the... Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So he knew what was going to happen. He had laid plans, as we can see, because he's the one that gave Dantus the heirloom necklace that was made of glass, piece of shit. He's been paying Dantus this whole time.
Yeah. It kind of makes the... Well, yeah, it makes Dantus' motives a little
Well, I think Peter Baelish paid Dantus to poison Joffrey. So yeah, now I kind of pointed out Dantus was a prime suspect, especially since he was the one leaving with Sansa. But now it all makes sense because Baelish has been financing him.
Yeah, but how do you... I don't know. Because I don't know how Dantus would have access to his food to poison him. Dantus is already off the stage. Joffrey had already taken a drink of his wine.
Well, someone brings the wine to the table, man.
That's true. I doubt it's the king's fool, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it definitely seems like... But, you know, Baelish has contacts everywhere.
Yeah, Baelish is, I think, definitely behind
But I think now. Dantus was his inside man orchestrating everything.
Yeah, because you don't lay plans just to get Sans out and then not have some kind of distraction or something planned.
Oh,
he's already made his want of the throne known.
He knew exactly what was going to happen. But poor Dantus, as much as he's helped out Sansa, he didn't get his due reward, did he?
Oh, no. Didn't you hear Baelish?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'll get you your reward.
It was a crossbow bolt to the face.
Yep.
I mean, he literally ate this one.
Yep.
He ate it. Baelish makes a...
Quote, that money buys a man's silence for a time, but a bolt in the heart buys it forever.
That's right. And then, but you know what he follows that up with? Because that's when we find out that Baelish has been financing Dantus. He takes the necklace from her neck and then crushes the glass or whatever the hell is made out of. And then he says something. Remember what I told you when I first got to the city?
Oh, yeah.
But we're all liars here.
And then he immediately walks off with her and tells her it's going to be okay.
Yeah! So it's kind of like, well, you're telling me we're all liars here, but what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
That's so odd. So, here's what I think Peter Baelish's current play is. He made everybody think he was going off to cavort with Catelyn Stark's sister at the Eyrie. But I think he really wants to marry a surviving Stark to inherit Winterfell.
Gunning for the North.
Yeah. So he'll create his base of power in Winterfell, and then because he'll be part of the Starks or whatever, all those old bannermen will, or at least he's hoping, will flock to him. And of course, he's obviously has resources.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so that was a very interesting, I think this was probably the most interesting scene of the episode. It raises the most questions for sure.
Yeah.
So we cut back to King's Landing, and we see Marjorie and Olenna, discussing the very same question we discussed last episode.
Is she the queen? Is she going to be the queen? Is she already the queen? And how does that work out?
All the permutations of queendom. So, so what does Olenna have to say about that?
She says, that question, supposedly, yes. But that question's left in a little bit of doubt thanks to Joffrey not having the...
What I got from this is that she's not queen.
Oh, I got kind of... I got...
Well, I think that she's in a position to be queen again.
Yeah.
Because they're going to want to marry her off to Tommen. Which this kind of loops into another scene later on in the episode. You know, Olenna's basically discussing...
Next scene, yeah.
Yeah. Olenna's discussing that you're in the best position that you've ever been in right now.
Yeah.
Because one, really, yeah, it would have been nice to be queen, but it would have fucking sucked to be married to Joffrey, all right?
I think we can all agree that that she would have just been doing damage control the entire time.
Oh, it would have been awful.
Yeah.
Awful. Two, the Lannisters need the Tyrells, because the Lannisters, they always pay their debts, but they're having a hard time doing it right now.
Yeah.
Because they're up to their necks in hock with the Iron Bank, and Tyrells have a fairly large military force.
They're the two most powerful surviving houses, aren't they? Or some of the two most powerful?
They are two of the most powerful. I think, they haven't come out and specifically stated it, but I think Tyrells are maybe second.
Because the North's kind of destroyed.
Yeah. Tyrells are kind of second as far as...
The West is that Dragonstone?
I think Dragonstone's in the East, I'd have to look at another map.
And West is Dorne.
Dorne is South.
South. Never mind.
You should look on our Facebook page. I posted this awesome map, spoiler-free, and it's very legible, unlike many of the maps. You know, it's kind of... most of the maps you see are very artistic, but this one's very Rand McNally plain.
Yeah.
So, but it's an awesome little picture I posted. Well, I posted on all our social accounts. Still, even though Marge is in the best position she's ever been in, she's kind of feeling down on herself, right? So she was married to the gay guy who got assassinated by the Shadow Baby. And then she was married to the guy who liked torturing little animals. and people. She didn't mention people. But it was mostly people. It started with animals. It progressed to people. And now, you know, her future's in limbo. But Olenna Tyrell basically consoles her and says, hey, you're still necessary to the Lannister plan. So I think, yeah, they're going to... The plan is that they'll marry her off to Tommen.
Yeah, and I think he'll be much easier for Margaery Manish and probably a better match anyway.
Oh, yeah. What I loved was you can see that this was all... It kind of reveals some of the Tyrell plan, right? Because Olenna actually says, you did wonderful work on Joffrey. The next one should be easier. Did you catch that quote?
Yeah.
So it's kind of always been, you know, even though it was easy to pick up on what the hell their game plan was, but now it's explicit.
Yeah, she's going to be the queen. Yes. To someone's king.
And then we go to the Septum, right? Is that what that's called?
Yes, the religious, the Sept or whatever.
Yeah, so the chapel. The
seven gods thing or whatever.
Again, we see Cersei. Well, what eventually comes up, it was pretty cool. It kind of comes full circle because eventually it's Cersei, Jaime, and a dead guy in the Septum, which was like the very first episode, right? With the hand, Aaron.
Yep.
But it starts out, Cersei and Tommen are next to Joffrey's dead corpse, pouting and moaning, right? Like they should because they're family. And then Tywin comes in, and this is probably the most respectable I've ever seen Tywin.
The least tyrant-like.
Yeah, the least tyrant. Like, I actually liked him in this scene. I mean, I like him in every scene, but I liked him. So it's like, wow, that's being really cool. Comes in there, and obviously Tommen is the next in line. Since Margaery and Joffrey didn't consummate their marriage, she's kind of null and void as queen. So that means Cersei is actually queen regent again, and Tommen is... Yeah, it's awful for King's Landing to have Cersei in control.
Yep.
And Tommen's going to be the next king. So Tywin comes in there, and he has a little speech for him. You know, he asks him, what makes a great king? What's the most important quality of a king?
I like all of his answers here.
He does. You know, Tommen's surprisingly smart for his age, and he starts off with holiness. And that's probably because they're in the Sept, you know, so it's kind of like a holy moment or whatever. And Tywin's like, yes, good kings are holy and pious. And then he gives an example, Baelor the Holy. And he goes on, he's like, but Baelor the Holy was kind of dumb because he made an 11-year-old or 12-year-old high septum. And then he eventually starved himself to death because food was of this world and anything in this world was sin. And so Tommen thinks, he's like, justice. And I like that one. Justice is a good quality. And of course, Tywin's like, Orse the First, he was a just king, but then his brother murdered him in his sleep. And this is reaching here.
Yeah, kind
of. It's reaching. I think it's a little bit reaching, but he's like, now, was it very just for him to be, it's kind of like, so what he's saying is, was it really just for him to be assassinated? No. So was it really just of him to be ignorant to the threats around him?
It kind of harkens back to Ned Stark and the way Ned Stark handled being the Hand.
Right. That is exactly. I imagine Orne the First was Ned's kind of king.
Yeah.
Even though he was assassinated. Tywin's like, you know, was it just for him to ignore the threats, to turn, you know, be ignorant to the threats around him and leave the country to be ruled by an evil guy? So Tommen comes back with strength. And Tywin's like, yeah, a strong king. It's good to be a strong king. Robert was strong. But, you know, he only attended 3 small council meetings in the 17 years he was king. And he drank and, or was it whored and drank and hunted until the last 2 things killed him.
I thought Cersei looked like she flinched there when he mentions all that stuff. He mentions that
it was known that he was a whoremonger.
Yeah, I know, but Cersei seemed to be a little bit personally offended by some of that.
Yeah, she definitely had a reaction. And it was like, you know, the problem with being strong is Robert thought that winning was ruling, and it's really not. But Tommen finally gets it next. He says wisdom, which is really, that is true. It is very true.
Wisdom, as in cunning? As in...
Well, no, it's wise. It's knowing when to apply which quality, right?
Yeah.
But where does wisdom come from? It comes from experience. So if you're inexperienced, where do you get wisdom from? You listen to people you put in positions, counselors, advisors that have the experience, and you listen to them. Of course, you know, Tywin's putting himself...
As the person you need to listen to.
You know, I'm the real king here.
That's kind of interesting.
Then he immediately takes a dig at his brother, right? Dead Joffrey, lying there in front of his mom and his brother. And he's like, your brother was not a wise king or a good king. If he was, he might still be alive, which is true.
That's another very slap true. In the face to Cersei. Yeah, yes. Very true.
And then, you know, he drags him off. He's like, kings need to be married. And then it's like, it turns into what I think is going to be a birds and the bees conversation. He's like, you know, do you know anything about...
Well, this kind of leads back to Lady Olenna. She said the next one.
Yeah.
I think that her and Tywin have already been playing. Oh, yeah.
So I think this is going to lead into the birds and the bees conversation about, hey, this is where you stick your penis. Your penis goes in the vagina. You move it back and forth until you ejaculate. And then, boom, you have an heir.
I don't think that's where that conversation was going.
He said, because, you know, he asked him, do you know anything about where, I thought he asked, do you know anything about where babies come from? And he's like, I know a little. And he's like, well, it's pretty straightforward. And I'm pretty sure that's exactly before Jamie came, before Jamie entered and after Jamie, you know, after they leave Jamie. I'm pretty sure that's exactly where that conversation was going to go.
Interesting. I didn't catch that.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely going to be a birth.
I thought it was going to lead into his proposal to Marjorie.
It would, well, that's gonna be part of it, but then it's gonna be like, and then after you're married, this is what you do with your penis. And then, so we have some more penis action coming up, though, right?
Yeah.
And this is probably the darkest.
The blackest penis action.
Besides, well, I don't know, probably the darkest event I remember from Game of Thrones is the slaying of all the babies.
Oh,
all the bastards from season one or whatever.
And look who perpetrated that. Joffrey.
Well, that was his mom. Seriously perpetrated that.
No. Nope. She didn't stop it. But Jeffrey's the one that gave her the order.
Joffrey gave the order, but I'm pretty damn sure it came from Cersei.
I don't think it came from her at all.
Oh, I think so.
See, they had her and Jaime had the discussion about that. No, her and Tyrion had the discussion about that. After he came back, when he first arrived back at King's Landing, he had a discussion with her, and then he realized...
Well, Cersei's not gonna tell
him
shit.
He was giving her shit about it, and he finally realized, oh, you didn't give the order. Joffrey did, because you can't control him.
Huh. I'll have to go back and watch some of that.
At least that was my impression of all that.
So anyways, Jaime comes in here to visit Cersei, and he dismisses everyone, even the High Septum. I need to get these titles down. So it's Mommy, Daddy, Uncle, Dunkle. It's Mommy, Dunkle, Dead Boy reunion. And Cersei's demanding that Jaime kills Tyrion. It's like, it's Tyrion. I know it. It's Tyrion. God damn, she is fucking a moron. I can't imagine anybody would really think it was Tyrion.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone would blame Tyrion for that.
Now, they might want to have a scapegoat, an easy scapegoat, and I can see them crucifying Tyrion to do that, but I can't believe anybody with a modicum of intelligence would be like, oh yeah, it was definitely Tyrion. Even Jaime has doubts. He's like, well, you know, it'll come out in trial. She's like, no, I need to, he will worm his way out, and he's like, she's like, I need him dead now. And
that's where she tries to play him, I think. I think this is kind of what led him, right before this all goes down, he calls her a hateful woman.
Yeah.
Hateful.
Is well, it, he said, hateful? Why did the gods curse me to love a hateful woman or something like that?
Yeah, and this is where, because she totally plays him. She totally tries to play him.
Yeah, because she starts kissing him and stuff.
No,
and
then, like, she's, I need you to kill him now. Like, basically ruin your life to kill Tyrion.
True.
And then
she also starts kissing him and stuff, yeah. And then pulls away, and then that's when he does the hateful woman thing.
Yeah.
At this point,
it goes dark.
It goes real dark. So, I don't know why you'd be listening to this cast or watching Game of Thrones if you're squeamish about this kind of thing, you know, trigger warnings and all that stuff. Jaime rapes Cersei.
Right next to their dead son.
Right next to their dead son. God, that is heist
in the Septon, which
dark shit. I can't believe they did that. So they did this whole character arc with Jaime, basically bringing him out of the shit mire that he was in at the beginning because he pushed Bran off the tower.
I've been saying it's insane always. Don't forget, he pushes kids out of windows. Well, how good can he be?
His character arc since then has been interesting. You can't say it hasn't been interesting.
Yeah, definitely been interesting.
Okay, so he's still a dick, and this proves it. Now, I'm not a book reader, but I saw this shit pop up all over my social networks that this is not how it went down in the books. And listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, but the thing that I saw was some news article decrying Alex Graves' direction of this episode. Because one, in the books, it was consensual. Two, Alex Graves said, now this is what he says, and I'm not quoting it, I'm paraphrasing it, but he basically says, yeah, it was consensual by the end of it. Which is, let me tell you listeners, is fucked up that he even said that. You can't, his thinking is here, you just rape her until they consent. That's still rape, man.
Yes.
Even if they give up, this is the way I view the scene. No matter how you cut it, it was rape.
Yeah.
It wasn't consensual at the end. And if you're thinking that, that's bullshit.
There's no such consensual by the end. there's no such thing as that.
I have serious issues with this scene. One, because it's very, you know, there's rape. I don't like rape. Rape's a bad thing, no matter how you cut it. So, you know, so is everything else that's happened in Game of Thrones. Killing babies, murder, assassination, mass death, whatever. You know, it's all bad. But I kind of feel that this was a bridge too far, maybe, because in the books it was consensual, which I think would support Jaime's storyline better, because he's kind of been on this path to redemption. If it's consensual, even though it's still fucked up there in front of their dead boy's body, not that I give a shit, because, you know, basically at that point it's just dead meat.
Lots of meat.
And they'd be defiling a holy place, which I'm also all right with. But the rape shit is not all right with. And I'm sure a bunch of, do we have conservative listeners? I don't know. If they know me and they came across from the Night's Watch, then chances are 10-1 that they're probably not conservative. They're liberals or more liberal-minded, or at least free thinkers. This is the thing I want to talk about that I mentioned at the beginning, because this is pretty fucked up. And a lot of people were, you know, saying, well, you should stop watching Game of Thrones, kind of like in protest to get your message through the creators of entertainment that this is not the type of shit we want to watch. But I'm not convinced that that is what we need to do.
Well, it's not like it goes away from the world, that dark things don't happen.
Well, I think
just because they don't happen on the TV screen.
It's true. I mean, but I think to have compelling stories, you have to have dark shit happen.
Yeah.
I don't know how dark you want it to happen or how dark things need to go, but I mean, definitely dark things need to happen because you have to have struggles to overcome. Otherwise, everything's like a My Little Pony episode.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. My Little Pony is an excellent show about friendship and magic. And, you know,
I'm going to take your word for that.
Good things happen in that show. It's an awesome show, but I don't want everything to be like that. You know, I think there needs to be some dark shit. I don't know. And it also kind of crosses over into, you know, like when we had the Columbine high school shootings, well, all high school shootings in general, and everybody's blaming Marilyn Manson, or everybody's blaming Grand Theft Auto or video games, media, a big thing to point media, a finger at media for the world's problems. And I don't think you can do that, because I believe in free speech, freedom of creation, and, you know, you have to be the censor for yourself.
I think turning a blind eye to something that is happening is not just because you don't like it. Now, you can get up and walk out just because you don't like it, but it's still there, so...
Well, I'm just saying it's media, and don't... Stories are...
Yeah,
well,
it goes to media.
A lot of people are saying, well, you know, it affects culture, and it does. Stories, good stories, affect people. They change the way you think about things, but I don't think this scene, unless you're a cretin, is going to be like, yeah, I'm going to go out and rape somebody until they submit. That's not what
I think it's
most, cool. That's not what 90% or more individuals would get from this story. I think they'd be like, wow, that's fucked up. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah. I think that's the way the majority of people are going
to
view that.
But hey, I'm open to discussion. If there are any listeners out there that wants to open a dialogue about rape culture or any other type of taboo in media, be it violence, well, any kind of violence, that's the things we're talking about. Violence, sexual violence, it really boils down to violence, right? Violence in media. If anybody would like to open a dialogue with me to try to...
It seems like there are two, like, it seems violence in media is one issue, and then sex and violence together is a completely different issue.
Well, I mean, it's still violence, right?
That's a stronger issue of the same thing, because this goes back to, I was at the movie theater watching 300, the new 300 movie. There were kids there. Their parents clearly brought them in. And there's violence, people dying all over the place. When it gets to the sex scene, their parents made them leave the movie theater and then come back later after it was over.
What?
I am not joking. That happened. And I was like, what? You bring them into a movie that is full of just gratuitous amounts of violence.
True.
And you're okay with all of that.
Yeah, so, well, there's a question of, okay, so what's worse, sex or violence? Well, anything where there's violence, and then you add sex on top of that, like rape, that's obviously awful. But yeah. Sex in general, I mean, that comes from America's Puritan heritage, all right? It's ingrained in our culture, and I think it's something we need to deal with, because we don't want to talk about sex to our kids, and then our kids, because we haven't talked to them about it, they go out and have sex unprotected.
They don't know the what's natural.
They get diseases, they get pregnant.
Yeah.
Because everyone's afraid to have this conversation. And I hope to change that with my own daughter. I mean, she's 8, and when she was 7, we started talking about this stuff. For one, it's like almost, especially if you have a female kid, you know, you're like, oh, I want, you know, no sexy. But if you have a male kid, you're like, oh yeah, he needs to get laid or something, which is totally a double standard, because if you want him to get laid, that means that somebody else's daughter is going to have to provide the opportunity, which is totally a double standard. We have a big double standard. But again, that kind of comes back to our America's Puritan heritage, And I think that's something that we as a culture need to change, become more progressive on that, definitely. You need to open dialogues with your kids earlier. You need to not be afraid of the information providing them. But again, we need to address that, hey, when a girl says no, it's no. And it doesn't matter what the fuck she's wearing. Doesn't matter how much she's had to drink. Doesn't matter if she's fucking conscious. Well, I mean, it does matter if she's conscious, because if she's not conscious, she can't fucking consent. You know, that whole thing, well, she was dressed like a slut. Well, that fucking does not matter. Men. Rape is a man's problem, because you don't, I'm not discounting the instances of women raping men, because I'm sure it happens, but overwhelmingly, it's men raping men, men raping women, and it's a man's problem. We have to deal with it as men. The women shouldn't have to be worried about who they hang out with, or what clothes they're fucking wearing, or what neighborhood they're fucking walking through. But I digress. Rape is bad.
Rape is bad, okay?
Rape in media is dark and can be disgusting and repellent, but should we try to eliminate that from media? Should we be trying to censor media, saying that you can't put X in your stuff? What do you think?
I don't think so.
Not to say
that rape is okay. I'm just saying that when you hide it from public view, that doesn't make it any better. In fact, that makes it quite a bit the opposite.
Right, you need to bring it out to the front, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this whole scene in Game of Thrones gave millions of people the opportunity to have this discussion. Wow, that shit's bad. Jaime was a fuckhead.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the hell they're going to do, I guess.
If it turned a different way, the book, I can't, like, this just ruined that character, in my opinion.
True. I agree. So if this did not happen this way in the book, then I think this is definitely Alex Graves and or the writers, showrunners, D.B. Weiss and David Benioff failed in this particular scene. I think we spent enough time on this scene, and we will continue on to somewhere in the north, maybe almost northeast, near Fair Market, we think, right?
Yeah. So we're back to Sandor.
Sandor and Arya. The Sandor and Arya Roadshow. So it starts out with Sandor taking a leak. They always have the best scenes with this guy. And they're talking about, you know, what he plans to do, right? So after he drops Arya off at the Eyrie and gets his reward, what is he going to do?
He doesn't know. He said he's probably going to go across the sea and take up work as a sellsword.
Yeah, being a mercenary across the narrow sea.
Think that work suits him. It does.
Well, I think Dany needs him, right? They need him to go over there and speed her fucking journey up.
That would be interesting.
So Sandor needs to go with an expedite the Dany journey back across the narrow sea. So while they're talking about him booking passage across the narrow sea, you know, Arya's like, you know, I have friends in Braavos.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
She does have friends in Braavos. Sandor doesn't believe her. And then he shoots like one hell of a snot rocket. Did you see that? I wonder if they actually had special effects, like put shit up his nose. Because it was fucking gross.
Yeah. I think they were going for that.
I don't know if he was just like, nah, just, you know, I'll just not blow my nose for a couple of days. And then for this scene, I'll blow a real fucking nasty loogie right in the goddamn ground. But, I mean, it was pretty slimy.
Yeah.
And then, of course, somebody rolls over the bridge that they're underneath. And he's like, you know, what's going on? And he's like, well, what does it matter to you? They're like, well, it's my land. And Sandor says something awesome. If I'm standing on it, it's mine.
I don't think that guy should have taken that tone with Sandor.
Yeah.
Someone carrying a sword like that, you don't just mouth off, because there are too many people getting murdered all over the place in this.
Well, story. And he even says that, he brings that up later, right? It was kind of, I'm surprised he did that.
Yeah, especially with his daughter right there. That dude was kind of mouthy.
Maybe it was because Arya was there. You know, there's a little girl there.
The little girl's carrying a sword, though.
She's carrying a sword.
So he might be a little boy.
I mean, that's true. Her hair's still short, so people may not know. Arya does some damage control here, and he's like, please excuse my father. He hasn't been the same since, you know, our house burnt down, my mother died, and all this shit. And he was injured in the battle at the twins or whatever.
Yes, so which house was it?
Oh, yeah. And he asked what house, and she's very good at reading people.
Yeah.
Either that or she knows the land she's in and takes an educated guess. But she says that Sandor fought for the Trout.
Yep, the Tullys.
The Tullys. The property owner offers them a place to sleep and food. And I immediately think this is not going to turn out well.
Yeah, that's the same thing I was thinking. I was like, oh, God.
So we get,
dude is probably going to be murdered.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. He's going to die. We cut to his dinner table. The guy, he's saying a prayer, which, of course, is agitating Sandor because he's like, are you going to go through all fucking seven of them? And, of course, Arya's like, Father! You know? And then Sandor closes the prayer with, and may the stranger not come kill us in our sleep for no fucking apparent reason or something like that. And he begins putting the rabbit stew, right?
Yeah.
And they take most of it.
Yeah. They both get their fill before the other people do.
I guess they didn't get enough fucking chicken.
Apparently. I thought they had all kinds of chicken.
Yeah, they did not get enough chicken. I guess they've been on the road for a few days and they're starving. The property owner comments on, you know, he's got a sword and it looks like he knows how to swing it, and he might
be able to scare off some bandits.
Yeah, he admits that he has a little bit of silver left.
That was the worst thing he possibly could have done. That was
the worst thing he could have said. Because, yep. You know, he offers, you know, fair wages for fair work or whatever. And then Sandor agrees. And, of course, Arya's like, what the fuck?
Yeah. That immediately cuts to...
Arya's waking up, right?
Yeah, waking up to some shouting.
There's a scuffle. So she runs out there, and it looks like Sandor has blasted the guy in the head and took the silver.
Yep.
And then comes one of the best lines, one of the best curses in Game of Thrones. You know what that was? You remember what Arya said?
I don't remember.
You don't remember? She's like, you're the worst shit in the Seven Kingdoms.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, so...
I remember she just immediately started berating him.
Yeah, she's like, you're the worst shit in the Seven Kingdoms. And he, of course, comes back. He's like, well, there's worse than me. It's just, you know, I know how things work. How many more Starks do they have to behead before you catch on? And I thought there was going to be more to that scene, but bam, they cut.
Yeah, I figured she'd keep yelling at him, or a little bit more banter.
And we cut to the wall, we're at Castle Black.
Yeah, they're going through their new recruitments, it looks like.
Yeah, what is their...
Listing out crimes. It looks like Jaime's not alone. Raper, 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 thief, raper, raper and thief.
Yeah. Not only do they have a dual class. A dual class criminal.
Dual, oh yeah. Yeah.
Rapist thief. Which is awful. That's so awful I shouldn't be laughing. Anyways, that's a D&D joke for you. So, you know, they're going through the new recruits. I'm surprised they're still getting new recruits, to be honest.
Yeah, I didn't think maybe this is that. Well, no, the last class they had was cut down when they were searching for Arya. Remember, come from
King's Landing? Well, I'm just saying, you know,
they're kind of cut off.
Westeros is in a upheaval right now. I'm surprised anybody gives a shit about sending people.
They probably already had some people out recruiting, because it seems like they send a brother out to different places and they'll collect people from.
Which,
the
of course, you know, the pickings are slim, which is why they have, you know, out of all seven people that they named off, half of them were rapists. The other half was thieves, and there's like one guy who was the seventh son.
Sucks to be him. He picked the wrong time to join the Night's Watch.
But then we cut to Sam talking to Gilly while they pluck feathers out of some kind of poultry. I guess chickens or something.
They're pretty big for chickens.
Goose?
I don't know, goose.
I don't know what they are. Some kind of poultry, some kind of bird, because they're plucking feathers.
Yeah.
And we find out, one, no one believes Sam killed a Nightwalker.
I don't know
or
if
a
I could.
Nightwalker.
If I had seen it on my TV, I don't think I would have believed it either.
It's, yeah.
Sam's a bit of a coward.
I agree. He's kind of a weakling, whelp guy, but he's come a long way since the beginning.
I think this scene kind of shows that he hasn't come that far.
All right. Well, he came a long way when he was outside of the confines of Castle Black, but now that he's back among his brothers, who probably constantly talk down to him. Yeah, he's dropped down a few pegs again. And he's concerned about Gilly, right?
That's what he says. Yeah, he's concerned about Gilly.
Well, what do you think?
That he can't protect her, and that's, well, that's absolutely true. Who do you think they're going to go through to get to Gilly?
So you think he's really concerned about himself?
I think he's concerned about both of them, him and her. I don't think he's not concerned for her, but he can't do a damn thing to stop anyone.
I think he realizes that, but I think he cares less about himself. I think he's willing to make that sacrifice. He did go toe-to-toe with the fucking White Walker.
Yeah, that's true.
So he's talking about how, you know, there's 100 men that lay awake at night thinking about her. And, of course, she's like, what do you think about?
He just gets this nice stunned look across his face. His response, I worry.
Which, of course, this fucking episode is full of rape. It should have been called The Rapist. Which brings us back to the people that they just had. So, you know, the Night's Watch is composed of rapists.
Yeah.
There's a fair percentage of people there that were rapists, period. I would be concerned if I was Sam, too. Like, I don't think Gilly quite gets it.
No.
You know, like, these men are rapists, murderers, and thieves. They don't give a shit. They wouldn't have to go through Sam.
And you even hear a comment from the acting Lord Captain, isn't he now?
Yes, the
acting,
Lord Commander.
Yeah, the acting Lord Commander about raping Gilly.
What'd he say?
On his way out, he says something to Sam about Sam's whore.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to give her some money and see what happens. Maybe I'll find a copper or two for her.
Well, is that raping?
He thinks she's a
tendering
whore,
services. But... Well, I mean, being a whore is not the same as being raped.
Oh, I know that, but I'm just saying that dude, how far is he going to take that?
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. It's fucked up no matter how you slice it, but... Again, it's not rape, it's whoring.
Yeah, but how far do you think that dude is going to take it?
But poor Gilly, it's like she finally... So she's out from underneath her father, husband, Craster. out from underneath his thumb, finally finds what she thinks is a decent man, and I believe Sam is a decent man, even if a little bit weak. And wants to ship her off, right? Yeah, you'd be better off in whatever the hell that town is, Moles, whatever. Sounds lovely.
Yep.
So after this, we go to Dragonstone, and we find out, one, Davos can read a hell of a lot better than he used to, because he reads a message that says what?
I don't remember.
Joffrey's dead.
Is that what it said? I thought it said something about some usurper, but I didn't think...
Yeah, the usurper, Joffrey. From Stannis' viewpoint, Joffrey's the usurper, and he's the rightful heir to the throne.
Well, yeah, technically he is, because all those children are Jaime's and not Robert's.
Technically, I don't know if there's a technically here.
Yeah, there is. This is why.
Technically, if you were talking about the one with the oldest link to the throne, it would be Danny Targaryen.
That is true. Yeah.
So, because Robert was a usurper, he came in there and killed the Mad King. Not saying he didn't need it.
But as far as the line of Baratheon is concerned, Joffrey was a usurper.
Yes, I will cede that point. It's true. As far as Baratheons are concerned, Stannis is the heir to anything Baratheon. But I think at this point,
sitting on the throne.
Whoever at this point, as far as I'm concerned, there is no rightful heir to the fucking throne, all right? The closest one can claim is probably Daenerys Targaryen. Her family made the fucking throne.
And she's got the dragons to back it.
True. So Davos starts talking about the Golden Company, right?
Yeah.
It's a mercenary outfit.
Yeah.
But Stannis is upset at him mentioning mercenaries.
Because he doesn't have the money for any mercenaries.
Well, it was almost like an affront to his honor or something.
Yeah. And then I like Davos's response. You're willing to use blood sorcery, but you're not willing to fork over some money for some fighting men?
Right. And that's when Stannis says, well, you know, I can't afford them.
Then what the hell right do you have trying to take a kingdom?
Yeah, it is true. It's like, if you only have, because, you know, Davos is like, I got this person, you know, this house, this, or these bannermen, and, you know, Stannis is like counting pennies out, basically, on the war table, right? Well, yeah, that's not enough people to take the throne. Well, no, you had enough people, and you fucking blew it.
Yeah.
That's what I would have said if I was Davos, but, you know, he wants to live. So he said the time is running out for him to move on the throne, because if he doesn't act soon, everybody's going to forget his claim, right? And so if he doesn't have a claim, then no one's going to back his move. And if that time runs out, then so does Davos's time, because I guess he's on a fucking clock.
Yeah, that's kind of... I don't know why you'd threaten your, like, first lieutenant.
Wasn't he at one point going to... be killed. He was in the dungeons, right?
Yeah.
I thought they were going to sacrifice
him. For him apparently saying the wrong thing. For not being a yes man.
True, for going against Melisandre.
Yeah.
And so just by the hair on his chinny chin chin, did he avoid being burnt at the stake along with that, with Stannis's brother-in-law?
Yeah.
So I think he was bound for one of those stakes, man.
I don't know why he sticks around.
He's loyal. He's a loyal guy. And we all know what happens to loyal people in this fucking world. They all die.
They get murdered.
This doesn't pay to be loyal in Westeros. So we cut back. Davos is talking with Shireen, and it's reading lesson time, but he's like, no, you know, I've got too many things to do. And he's like, she's like, well, you won't make a very good hand if you call knights Kernigots. It's what's hilarious. And I was like, oh no. And he's like, and then he admits it. He's like, that only happened once.
I didn't catch that part.
Yeah, no, he's like, that only happened once. She gives him a book to read. It's like some story about pirates or something, right?
Yeah.
And she asked him, well, weren't you a pirate? But he wasn't a pirate. He was a walker.
He was a smuggler. And he started explaining the fine distinction between a pirate and a smuggler.
Yeah, he's like, she's like, my dad just thinks you're a criminal. And he's like, well, he lacks the ability to distinguish the finer points of criminal activity, right? There's a difference between a pirate. There's a difference between a pirate and a smuggler. First of all, if you're a famous smuggler, you're what?
You're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong, man. So, but he's reading the story about the pirates, and the pirates are going up against
the first sword of Braavos.
I have a soft spot in my heart for First Swords of Braavos from the first season.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that guy. But, I still don't know what happened to him. Yeah, I hope he didn't die.
We don't. We don't know. I hope we find out that he's not dead, personally.
So I would see him come save Arya, or find out that he's the assassin.
A first sort of Braavos, I think, is be above assassination.
Probably, but who says... What? The only credentials you have to back him is his word.
True. But Davos actually tangled with the First Sword, right? So oh, yeah. He's got some chops, I guess, because he's still alive. And also, the First Sword didn't understand the difference between a pirate and a smuggler, obviously, I guess.
Didn't seem to much care, either.
But he was talking about how he was, I guess he was going to try to smuggle or steal gold from the Iron Bank.
He said they don't much care for whatever kind of criminal you are when you're when their ships are worth that much.
Yeah, their barges, which immediately makes him stop reading, and he has a plan.
It seems like he's going to go steal a barge.
That's what I'm thinking. He's going to steal some Iron Bank gold, man.
That or maybe he was going to get a loan.
I don't think he's getting a loan. I don't think he's going to get a loan. I think he's straight up going to use his pirate contacts to steal the gold so Stannis can buy the Golden Company. But we'll have to see. So he gets Shireen to write a letter, and she's like, you should write it. And he's like, oh no, this is far too important for my clumsy hands to be writing.
It starts with some impersonation of Stannis.
Yeah, it does. Because he needs to get their attention, right? Well, we cut to Molestown. Sounds like such an appealing place. Don't you want to relocate to Molestown?
Yeah. No. No thanks. Place it looks dirty.
It
is
fucking
dirty.
Yeah, it's appropriately named, I think. And I'm thinking the whole time, so they're in a whorehouse. I'm like, why is he bringing her to a whorehouse?
Yeah, I kind of wondered that too.
Because I guess she's going to wash dishes and take care of all the other whores' children.
Yeah, because that's what most people do at a whorehouse.
Yeah, you know. And of course, you know, the madam, for lack of a better term, was like, well, you know, we can find other work for her too. He's like, no, I don't want the other work for her.
Nope, let's not. Let's keep her out of that.
I think it may come down to she finds other work there. Or other work finds her.
I think that may be the case.
Yeah, which will be unfortunate. And of course, you know, she's very pissed off that he's just kind of abandoning her. I personally think I would rather take the 100 rapists at Castle Black than live in that.
That's what I saw, because, I mean...
It was pretty shitty. Yeah. Was that piss on the floor that she was sitting next to?
I'm pretty sure. And that was not a nice place. At least she had it better at Castle Black.
Yeah, I'd give her a weapon. Here, stab the first motherfucker that wants to stick his penis in you.
Yeah, not only that, no, no, you saw that.
And it's consensual. But, you know, it's like, there's doors there. I didn't see any doors in Molestown. There's a lack of doors.
Yep, and a lack of people wearing tops.
Yeah, they just let their titties hang out. So after Molestown, we cut back to King's Landing, and hey, we go from one whorehouse to another whorehouse. I love how they segue.
Yeah, that was pretty nice.
They have nice transitions in Game of Thrones. And it's orgy time, man.
With Oberon.
Oberon and Lady Sand. And like three chicks and a dude. Beyond those two.
Yeah, they're spending some money there.
The male prostitute is confused at Oberyn's bisexuality.
Yeah, I love that response.
It is a good response, man.
You're missing half the world's pleasures, then.
I know, that's so good. It almost makes me want to be bisexual.
I'm sure.
I don't have any problems with anybody's sexuality, whatever it may be. As long as it's not a rapist sexuality, I don't have a problem with it. But yeah, you have to admit, that's a pretty solid view. Yeah, fucking logic, dude. You know, you're missing half the world's pleasure. That's pretty cool. Because, you know, he also says, when it comes to love, I don't choose sides. We have to get a t-shirt of that. Emblazoned, when it comes to love, I don't choose sides. And we'll have, like, a fucking viper on it or something.
Yeah. It should be him lying, you know, lying across the bed.
I'm not going to have it graphic. No, I want
people to
wear
it. It doesn't have to be graphic. It should be right when Tywin walks in on him.
Well, also, yeah, did you know she was wearing pants? No one else was wearing pants.
Yep, no
How
one
How do
else
you wear pants in a fucking orgy?
Apparently like that.
I guess, you know,
he was expecting visitors, clearly.
This was definitely fail on HBO's part or Alex Graves' part. They should have had that dude nude and have his big swinging cock up there when he's talking to Tywin.
So maybe you are bi.
Maybe I am. I have no problem, but I think he should have, you know, either he's got something in his contract that says, I'm not going to show my penis.
I think that's probably likely. That actor was like, eh.
But he should have, everyone else had full frontal nudity, except for, well, I think Illyria Sand, maybe she had some kind of dressy thing on, but.
She had some kind of robe of some kind.
Yeah, it was like gold or something, right?
Yeah.
Nah, totally. I think it would have been a better scene if he had his big swinging dick out there while Tywin was talking to him. Like, I guess he should have been holding it.
Yeah, this...
Like, stroking it or something while Tywin's talking to him?
Yeah, I can see that going over well. I see Tywin really enjoying that.
But Tywin's here to make a deal, right?
And, yeah, that harkens back to the whole bastards made of passion thing.
Yeah. Give Tywin some of his passion. Tywin's there to make a deal. What does he want Oberyn to do?
He first he was there to accuse him. Well, not necessarily make some accusations, but hey, you know, you're known as the poisoner.
Oh, question him. Yeah, they did. Yeah. He did question him. He was like, well, you know, so this is where we find out that he does know poison.
Oh, yeah. And that's probably part of the reason they call him the Viper.
Maybe. He's a good poisoner because he studied at the Citadel.
So he studied the Citadel, and then Tywin goes on to blame him, and he's like, oh, yeah, right, you didn't come here to blame me.
Right.
He's like, oh, so how did you know it was poison? Well, I'm a poisoner, duh.
Right. It was obvious! He didn't just choke. Because yeah, that's what Tywin said. A lot of people think he just choked. Yeah, right, he was poisoned. You see the blood coming from his eyes?
Yeah.
When you choke on food, you don't get blood coming out of your eyes.
Yeah, I know, I've choked on food before. I didn't
face just...
face
does not hemorrhage.
Yeah, I just didn't keel over dead.
But Oberyn actually says something pretty sharp. He says, well, I don't believe that the son is responsible for the sins of the father, right?
Yeah.
And so he's like, you know, that's not my style.
See, I told you he probably didn't have anything to do with that.
Well, I told you he didn't have anything to do with it. You're the one who brought up he was the Viper poisoner.
I don't think so.
It was you. I didn't have the information.
I don't think so.
Go listen to our episode.
I will.
It was you.
He wants a piece of Tywin.
He does want a piece of Tywin. But Tywin categorically denies he had anything to do with the mountain raping and killing his sister. And
I love that line. That nice little pause there.
Categorically. You know, every time he does that, like, when they have a scene where he just kind of stares at something, you know what I see? I see the little fake eye with the target on it from Last Action Hero. Ever watch that movie? He was a bad guy in that. So Tywin extends him the offer. If you find Tyrion, if I make you a judge at Tyrion's trial and you find him guilty, I will arrange a meeting with the Mountain.
It didn't sound like he was saying, if you find him guilty.
Oh, it sounded like, if you help me, I'll help you. That's exactly what he said. He said something almost exactly like that. If you help me, I will help you.
Yeah, but I didn't get the feeling that he wanted to. He was putting pressure on him.
Clearly wants him to vote against. I don't think, you know, I think Oberyn won't.
Yeah, I don't think he will either. That's why it would be surprised me that Tyrion even make that offer.
No, but I'm pretty sure he is. And in fact, even Tyrion thinks so. And when we get to that scene, I'll remind you. But also during the conversation, we find out something important. Something that I've been talking about, we've been talking about the past two episodes.
They know about the dragons.
They do know about the dragons.
And they are concerned.
They are concerned. Good. I'm glad somebody mentioned it. Because I was starting to get a little bit worried. I was like, does not anybody know this? Yes, we know this. But since they haven't crossed the Narrow Sea, we don't know. But we also find something else out. A little bit of exposition here. That Dorne was one of the few people that was able to resist the Targaryen dragons.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting tidbit of information.
I wonder if it has to do with, I don't know, their sandy place that they live.
Desert? You think deserts stop dragons?
I don't know. Maybe
I don't know. It looks like they're steamrolling pretty good over there.
Okay, maybe they have some kind of resource is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. They haven't mentioned. I mean, they didn't mention before how they stopped them, so maybe they have a sort of secret weapon.
But he said, you know, only the Dornish resisted the dragons. Well, that's an interesting fact. And then we go to Tyrion. He's in the dungeon, and Pod the Rod arrives with not very good news, right?
Yeah, they took the one thing he tried to smuggle in, and he said, as he starts pulling out all this other stuff.
Yeah, he's a pretty good. Speaking of smugglers, Pod is a pretty good. He has a career at smuggling because he had a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah,
candles, quills, pens,
sausage,
like cheese. I don't know. There's a whole bunch of shit he pulled out.
He should go work with Davos.
Exactly. That's where he should go after this. He should go to Dragonstone with a loser. No, he should definitely travel someplace else like Dorne. I would go to Dorne. Dorne seems like the cool place to hang out.
And it seems like Pod can make his way through there pretty nice.
Yeah. But then we find out Tyrion knows exactly how Tywin is operating because he is not surprised one iota about Pod's report. He knows that he has gotten Mace Tyrell to be the other judge, so Mace is going to vote however Tywin votes. And then he also got Oberyn, and he makes a comment. Tyrion makes a comment when Pod tells him he got Oberyn. Remember the comment?
He says something. He must have offered him something.
He says he sure knows how to take advantage of a situation.
Oh, yeah.
And this is why it makes me think that that's definitely why he was there. Because he's going to make him judge, going to set him up to meet the Mountain. So I imagine he's going to arrange the Mountain's eventual death at the hands of Oberyn. And he's going to give him a place on the Small Council.
All in one stroke. That's
all for finding Tyrion guilty.
I don't think so. I think this is just repairing the relations between Dorne and King's Landing.
No. It is. He expects him to find them guilty.
No, I think he's just setting him up for a future favor.
I don't think so. This is the favor.
I think finding the future favor is resisting some Targaryen dragons.
Well, that's he does that automatically because Dorne is not going to be... If they come across the Narrow Sea, Dorne is not going to be not a target. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but they are going to be one of the last targets.
True. And maybe that's why they survived, because they had to go through everything else before they got to Dorne. But we find out that they used something called strangler poison on Joffrey.
Yeah.
Yeah, because someone came to Pod and wanted him to testify that he helped Tyrion, or he knew Tyrion had gotten a hold of the strangler poison.
Yeah. Seems like there's an awful lot of people trying to set Tyrion up.
Yeah, there is.
There's definitely...
They even got Varys. They even got Varys to testify on Cersei's side.
Yeah.
Which is... Obviously, that's Varys covering his ass.
Yeah. I still think... I now definitely think Baelish... This smacks of Baelish. He's got a lot of avenues covered.
Yeah.
There's a lot of underhanded things going on here.
Well, of course it smacks of Baelish, because he took Sansa, which makes Tyrion look even more guilty.
Yep.
Baelish totally hung Tyrion out to dry. That's all there is to it. There may be more to it, but I'm pretty sure that's who I'm going with now. Peter Baelish is the one who...
This definitely seems... Everything. It seems like... Tyrion's really the only match for Baelish as far as, like...
Who to throw under the bus?
Yeah, underhanded things. Like, the whole back alley sort of dark thing. The whole politics.
Oh,
his rival in political maneuvers.
Yes, like him that. And... Are you talking about him and Varys are definitely...
Well, him, Varys, and Tyrion.
Well...
Varys is a little bit too...
Varys doesn't have eyes... Well, he doesn't want the throne himself, because, one, he can't have the throne.
Yeah, and two, he just strikes.
But I think Varys is the only. I think Varys is the only competition as far as politics go.
Well, he's a little too much of a coward. I think Tyrion was getting there though.
I don't know. He'd been knocked down quite a few pegs since he was hand.
Yeah, by his own family.
True. True that. You know, because he finds out someone approached Pod, and he tells Pod, he's like, "No, you." He's like, "You shouldn't have done that, because now your life's at stake." He's like, "You need to leave." And Pod's like, "What? No, I'm still, you know, I'm still your squire or whatever." But Tyrion basically says, "This is goodbye. You need to flee. Because I'm not going to have you die because of me."
Yeah.
Damn, Tyrion is awesome. He's definitely one
of... Now by far my favorite Lannister. The other one's busy...
He was always my favorite Lannister.
The other one was busy raping and throwing kids out windows.
There was no other Lannister that ever even approached Tyrion. But Tyrion has always been in the, you know, top three spot as far as characters in Game of Thrones go. And I think he's definitely probably the majority of Game of Thrones watchers' favorites.
Yeah, so they're probably going to kill him.
No, he's got some time, man. He's got some time. Here's what I hope happens. I hope Pod doesn't leave. I hope Pod comes back with Bronn and does a jailbreak.
Yeah, I just hope they don't kill Pod.
Because you know if he goes to trial, he's going to... Oberyn might...
I think Oberyn will surprise him. Oberyn's not the kind to just turn...
Well, I mean, it's majority. It's not... What is majority, right? So Mace and Tywin...
I didn't think it was majority. I thought
it has to be unanimous?
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't know the rules. They haven't told us the rules, right?
Yeah, they haven't told us the rules.
If he goes to trial, he's dead, though, one way or the other. Even if he's found innocent, Cersei's going to have him killed.
I do believe that, yeah.
Yeah. So he needs to get the hell out of King's Landing. And I think this is a great time for a jailbreak. We need a jailbreak episode, man. That would be fun. And not rapey.
Not rapey.
So we go just south of the wall. Wildlings are attacking towns and eating them.
Yeah, and just full-on onslaught, it seems like.
Yeah, what'd you think about this scene?
That was an interesting way to just open it. That guy just walking along, talking to his son, and then arrow.
Yeah, it was like right through his eye or something, wasn't it?
Right through the back of his neck.
Neck, yeah, that's right. Whoop! Yeah, that's awful, man. That's an awful way to watch, you know, for a kid. And also that kid...
I was expecting, this, as dark as this episode was, I was totally expecting that kid to just get mowed down by something.
I thought he was going to be eaten alive.
Yeah, that's
personally.
Kind of the way this episode was going, I figured he would eat.
It was the way this episode was going. But also, that kid needs to learn, he needs to play more hide and seek, because that was a shit-tay hiding spot.
To be fair, he was under a lot of stress.
It was, yeah, a very stressful situation, but still. And it even gets worse for him, because, you know, the thin steer, or Steyr, or however you pronounce his name, yanks him out, drags him over to his dead mother and father, and says, "Is that your mommy and daddy?" "Yeah." "I'm going to eat them."
Straight up.
"Yeah.
I'm going to eat them.
I'm
going to
eat them. Dead mama and papa stew. Go tell the Night's Watch. Do you know where Castle Black is? Go tell the Night's Watch." And then we find the boy at Castle Black, and they're discussing what to do, right?
Yep.
So some of them want, or actually the majority of them really, want to go wipe out the wildlings.
And it seems like that's exactly what the wildlings want.
And that is what the Lord Commander says. They want to bring us out in the open so they can pick us off, you know, basically nickel and dime them until they have nothing left.
Yeah, he tells their strength, 100 men. 100 men aren't going to do much against a couple thousand unless they have a wall.
Well, the ones on the south here aren't a couple thousand. They're a handful. But they're going to use guerrilla tactics, right? Lure them out in the open, pick a few off, go run away. And they're going to keep doing that until they have nothing left. John, but then they're like, you know, it's kind of like a snide comment. Like, well, what do you think, John? What's your advice? And he's like, well, you know, Mance is coming. And he's got like 100,000 people. And he's going to roll right over this wall. And nothing's going to stop him until he gets way south. There's nothing there to stop him until he gets way south.
Until he hits another army.
Right.
And that could definitely be a while, the current state the South is in.
So John kind of counsels to, hey, yeah, let's stay here in Castle Black, make sure things are safe. Because, you know, like, what should we do? Personally, I think they should put the word out. Everybody come to Castle Black.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Makes more sense. If you're going to be killed by Thins anyway, you might as well go fight somewhere safe.
Right. Come here. Bring your shit, your livestock. Help us, you know, shore up the defenses. You know, we'll protect your families. I don't know why they didn't do that. That's dumb. That would be my first thing. Because, first of all, they have a shit ton of abandoned forts all along the wall.
Yep. Plenty of places for people to move into.
Exactly. That are defensible. But then we get, they hear the gates opening, right? So rangers are returning.
Yep. Horns sounding.
Then where did these guys come from?
These are the friends from Crasters.
Yeah, they escaped. They said they were tied up.
They said they asked them what took them so long, and they're like, well, we had some chain. Yeah.
But then that brings up a point, like, shit, these guys know how many people we have. Mance thinks we have a lot of people. When Mance gets to Craster's Keep, these guys are going to spill the beans. So this is where John finally is like, well, we need to go after
them. Yep, we need to go kill them right now.
So they have a dilemma. Go up there and kill them or stay? What do you think is a smarter choice?
I definitely think going in a quick lightning strike to kill those people and then coming back.
I agree. I think they probably have to do that to maintain the farce, right? But then again, how much time is that really going to buy them?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to buy them much.
Yeah, they're in a tough position, the Night's Watch.
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. So we know that the Boltons are on their way here too. Locke and his men.
I wonder if he'll run into the Fens.
I was wondering that myself. I'm wondering if they're going to come there during some kind of attack, back up this side of the wall, right? They're going to let them in. Locke is going to try to assassinate Jon Snow, and then they're going to have fighting inside the keep.
The person who is currently in charge of the Night's Watch, I don't think cares if Jon Snow gets assassinated.
Yeah, but a lot of people will.
Yeah, a lot of people will. I don't think the leadership will care.
Well,
I don't think there'd be a war. I think it'd be more of a small skirmish.
Well, there's only going to be a small skirmish anyways. It's not like Locke is bringing an army.
That's true.
Then we get to the final scene of the episode. We're at Meereen, finally. Wow, how many episodes does that take? I don't know. Yeah. These fucks don't know what's coming, right? They're up on... That's a big-ass wall, too.
That is a massive wall.
But they're up there, you know, partying, have a good time. They send out their champion. And Dany's like, what the hell's going on?
Yep, she's got her army formed up there ready to attack. She wants to deliver some demands. And then this douchebag rides out.
So her counselors inform her, hey, it's a champion. So they're expecting you to send another champion up against them. And then there's a big dick measuring contest, right?
Quite, almost literally.
Almost literally. You know, because he's over there. First of all, the champion goes over there and then pisses, right? I guess he was making some kind of statement about how they have an army of dickless dudes.
Yeah.
The eunuch army, right?
Yep. Which,
of course, you know, so Danny's got a... Man, this felt so contrived. This particular part of the scene. Who should we send? Yeah. And Grey Worm's like, you should send me. But yes. Danny's like, well, you're the commander of the Unsullied. I can't send you.
Very storybook there.
It was, wasn't it? And then, so...
Just go down the list.
Who's the old guy?
Sir Barristan.
Barristan. I always want to say Bannister. Sir Barristan. I've won more sword fights than anybody. And then Danny's like, that's why, exactly why I need you here, you know, by my side. And then, of course, Jorah's like, I've been with you the longest.
It seems like
it's a three little pigs.
It seems like there's some hesitation. They probably didn't mean it to be
moment.
There. Yeah, they probably didn't mean it to be there. But it was like a moment before Sir Jorah actually stepped up. Like,
Jorah's like, I've been with you the longest. Let it be my privilege. And she's like, no, that's exactly why I need you to keep you here. And of course, then we have Daario.
Everyone just kind of turns and looks at him.
Yeah.
He's like, Daario's like, crap.
Well, you know, I'm not a commander. I'm not this or that. And I'm not one of your counselors. But I'm a badass. So let me go do it. And of course, she's like, okay. Except he doesn't get a horse. And this guy, which is I find odd because obviously this area of the world of Westeros, which we don't have a word for, because Westeros is the continent. I think this is Eos. This part of the world is obviously based on Middle Eastern, and I don't know if they're known... Were they known for jousting?
I don't think... It doesn't look like a jousting lance that he's got there, though.
Well, it was a lance.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a jousting lance, though.
It's a lance, though.
Yeah, it is.
And he's horseback. I mean, it's they were known for long horse.
Spear or whatever, yeah.
They were known for... Was it? Well,
it was like a really long spear. It didn't seem like you could couch it.
Okay, well, all right. Well, it seemed like a lance, which seems very... European to me, I don't know. It just seemed out of place here.
Yeah. I will agree that.
You know, because he had a plume and everything. And so, but Daario, he's just going to stand on the ground. And of course, Danny's like, don't you want a horse? And he's like, yeah, horses are stupid. And of course, oh, there is a protracted, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? He's charging. Dario's just standing there. Oh, no, what's going to happen? Danny has a look of petrified. You know, she's terrified about what's going to happen. And then he pulls out a dagger and he kisses it and throws it into the horse's eye. The guy falls off and then he decapitates him. Right, so it was very like, no shit, this was gonna happen. Did you really think? Do you at any point in time did you think Dario's life was at stake?
No, I definitely didn't feel that way. Although I'm told that it's completely different in the book again. So apparently there is another character that came with Sir Barristan, named Strong Bellows, and apparently that dude, like, apparently that champion had been taunting them for days, not just, you know, a few minutes. And he, like, on top of the wall, pissing off, yelling challenges down to him, and finally they send Strong Bellows against the dude. Strong Bellows, I guess, just kept dodging the horse until the horse got tired.
Oh, really?
And then killed the horse.
That's kind of more interesting. Because, you know, being able to place a dagger in a charging horse's eye is pretty fantastic. I mean, this is a fantasy, so I will let it slide. It was interesting, but I do believe this whole scene was very contrived. I do like what happens at the end, though, right?
Yeah, just... Oh, you're talking about, like, just horse knife throw and then decapitation as the guy stands up. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, I'm talking about the very end. Where it's like, she gives a speech. The speech was pretty good.
I thought the speech was pretty powerful, yeah.
The speech was pretty good. And then I see him pull up the catapults. I'm like, wow, they're just going to commence.
Especially with all those people standing there. I can see her just
all the people that she was wanting to break free. I'm like, wow, that's not very good PR, man.
Yeah.
But I was mistaken because they just launched barrels, right? Barrels full of what?
I didn't know at first, and then I was kind of unsure when they actually started breaking. And then they finally did that kind of shot where you see like the full barrel break against the wall. I was like, oh,
and the slave chains. Picks up, yep. Blows his collars, right? The slave. At first, I thought maybe they were sending the.
I
corpses.
Thought there were some chains too in there.
Yeah, there is some chains and slave collars. But at first, I thought, oh shit, there's firing those corpses they took down.
Yeah.
The mile markers? I thought they were gonna bury that. I was like, that's some dark shit. But then, yeah, so the guy picks up the collar, and that's pretty much where they cut.
And you just see him look at the collar, look back at the other guy near him, look at the collar, look back. Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, those guys we know how this is going to go. Because that's the way she's won the last city, right? The people won from the inside,
yeah.
Basically.
I was expecting just a full dragon strafing run.
Well, I think they used up a majority of their budget on the dragons will bite their mother scene.
That could be. It could be.
I don't know.
I was, you know, I have all those people sitting along that wall watching this entertainment.
Waiting. Well, there's slaves up there, though. But I imagine we will see plenty of dragon shit later on in the series, in the season. About, you know, episode 8, 9, or 10. Look for more dragon strafing runs then.
Perfect.
Now that we've gone through the episode again, what was your overall view? You liked it?
I liked the episode. As dark as it kind of was, I still liked the episode.
Well,
I definitely liked the way it ended.
I liked the way it ended too, except for that scene did kind of feel very contrived.
I felt that moment seemed very contrived, especially when they're going through all the counts. Oh, by the way,
that's Daario, what I'm talking about.
You have no purpose here.
Right.
Why don't you step up to
the champion? Like... It was very fairy tale type things. Well,
to me, it seemed like
it was a Goldilocks scene, is what it was. Well, this porridge is too cold. This porridge is too hot. This porridge is just right.
Now, when you mention it, it does seem contrived. But at the time I was watching it, there was enough pauses in there, like between the counselors, like, is he going to be a coward? Sir Jor hasn't jumped at this chance yet, so
it didn't
seem like they were happy-go-lucky enough to jump at the chance. It seemed Daario was more like, fuck it, I'll do it.
Knowing what we know now, are there any predictions that you want to... Obviously, Peter Baelish isn't going to be at the Eyrie for Sandor and Arya.
Yeah.
Dantos is probably the poisoner, but the ultimate poisoner was probably Peter Baelish.
I agree. I think he the one that arranged all of that. I think, I don't know what's going to happen there, because I can't imagine... He might marry Sansa at the Eyrie once he's, you know, once he's gotten her there.
Well, why did he even go to the Eyrie for that? I guess because it's safer?
Well, that's on their way north, I think.
That's kind of way the hell... Yeah, it's along the coast there, I think. I need a map in front. We need a map. I'm going to print out a map, and then we'll have it in front of us when we do the podcast.
Good idea. Then we don't look as big of fools when we make these kind of predictions.
So is there anything else you want to talk about for this episode?
No, I just really think the difference in Strong Barrows and the kind of the juxtaposition of the characters they actually cut out is kind of nice. But I don't really want to read the books for that.
Yeah, I'm not going to read the books.
Because I feel like, yeah, probably shortened it a bit. That is interesting, though, because apparently that character comes back later in the books, is what I'm told. I don't know for what. But I have one friend that's halfway through reading the fifth book, and the one friend that's actually finished.
Are they raving about, Strong Bellow's not in the series?
No, they weren't all that mad. They just informed me of the fact that scene was different, and then why, and then the missing character. And apparently that dude is pretty badass, the Strong Bellow's guy.
Yes. Yeah. He sounds like it.
He always takes a cut on his stomach.
Oh, wow.
For every opponent, he lets them cut him on his stomach. So he has a massive scar tissue there. So he obviously let the dude cut him before he killed him.
That's strange.
Yeah. But he's huge. The dude's huge.
Okay. Well, if anyone wants to open up a dialogue about any of the things we covered here, any of our opinions, especially my opinions about the rape shit, you can reach us at facelessmencast@gmail.com, at facelessmencast on Twitter, facebook.com/facelessmencast, madbrewlabs.com. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and definitely leave us some ratings and feedback. Thanks for listening.
Valor Morghulis.